Carly, thank you so much for being with us. I'm excited for this. It's not every day I get to interview one of the world's best in anything, you know, so I'm excited that I finally get to interview you. I've known of you and we have a relationship through social media, but I've never really officially gotten a chance to meet you. So I'm really excited about this.
Me too. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Carly, I know through social media, you've mentioned, that you and your husband may have contracted this virus going around and not even known it. What was that like? What did you feel? How do you feel now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no real true test of knowing. It's just kind of going back and thinking about how we were feeling. It was after actually qualifying the game against Mexico where I wasn't really feeling myself. But there wasn't a huge amount of buzz in our country about the coronavirus. And in talking with a lot of friends and family, a lot of people were sick, you know, this winter. And it wasn't just, you know, flu-like symptoms. I mean, it was something where everybody was hit a bit harder. So, I out of nowhere just started to kind of get a little bit of a scratchy throat one morning, and I wasn't run down or anything. So it was a little bizarre how I, woke up feeling that way and felt a little achy as well. And then, yeah, just kind of went on for a week. My husband was pretty bad. Now, I don't know if that was, you know, the man cold, as they say. but he was laid up on the couch for 3 days straight. He's never felt like that before in his life. So, you know, there's no way of telling, but it kind of makes you wonder if there was, you know, something kind of strain of it going around back then. I think it was here a little bit longer than everybody has thought. So is what it is. We're both healthy and fine. You know, it's crazy what's going on right now.
It is. And I know when we were trying to link up to get this interview going, you'd said, well, I have training at such hour. You're staying active. You're still training. You're still trying to maintain in top physical shape. What is it that you actually can do to maintain in shape, your regimen? Because obviously things change. You don't have a lot of contact with the ball in a team setting, in a tactical setup.
Yeah, I mean, believe it or not, I'm actually in a really good position right now. You know, it's been a busy couple of years for myself and a lot of my teammates. It's been a busy 15-year career, to be quite honest. So we just come off the conclusion of the She Believes tournament, and I was, you know, planning to kind of take somewhat of a little break before I got into the NWSL preseason to make sure that I was, you know, on course with feeling good for the Olympics. Then this kind of all came about as soon as we finished our last game at the She Believes Cup in Dallas against Japan. And I was afforded a break, a mental break, a physical break, took some time off, just basically did nothing. And, you know, luckily my coach and mentor, James, he's got his own facility. So we've been able to, you know, train pretty much every single day, whenever I need. I've been able to go to the track, a local track, and just, you know, get my running in outside. So I'm actually feeling really good about my environment right now. I've got a home gym as well that I work out in, but this right now, I'm taking advantage of the time to not have any appearances, not have anything other than just being home and training. And this is where I get all the repetition and I can, you know, continue to get better. It's almost like an extended off season that I'm getting again.
Hey, Carly, you're 37 years old. And for those out there that are listening or watching, explain what you mean by this mental break. Cause it's not only the physical aspect of this that you need a break from. You also need that break from what is a distraction of the actual season itself.
Absolutely. And I think I'm learning that the older I get to listen to my body. I've been someone who would just literally, if I could, go 365 days out of the year. I've been a little psycho in that regard. And so as I've gotten older, I've realized that breaks are very good for the mind, especially. I mean, of course, it's a physical break, but mentally to just shut off, to not have to worry about anything. You know, not thinking about getting up and figuring out when you're going to train or whatnot. It's good for the mind, you know, and it kind of re-motivates you. So I know when I take breaks off, you know, 1-2 week break, you know, it does set you backwards, as I'm sure you know, you know, just that 2 week window kind of coming back, you're breathing a bit heavier, you're sore, but it's worth it in the end.
Before we get into the hangovers, that is the World Cup and these tournaments, like She Believes and all that stuff, I actually want to get to the beginning. I want to go to your childhood. You were born in New Jersey, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so how does Carly Lloyd get exposed to the game? How does Carly Lloyd fall in love with the game? How does that process begin for Carly Lloyd?
So I grew up in a small town in Delran, New Jersey, working class neighborhood, nothing glamorous. My parents didn't have loads of money growing up, but they afforded myself and my brother and sister, you know, what we needed in life. And for me, you know, soccer was my biggest passion right from the start. There was something about the ball where I fell in love with it. Every game was a challenge. Every game was different. Sometimes it required a little bit more of a physical play. Sometimes it was more of a skill play. But, you know, every time I stepped out there, you know, I could display so many different things. So I just loved the sport. And I think the biggest thing that I can credit to laying the foundation and what there's been talk around the whole country about the world of soccer in the U.S. is practicing on my own. You don't see many kids practicing on your own. Everything is structured. Everything is planned. I went to the field by myself. I jumped in with boys and I just played and I played freely and I made mistakes and I tried different things and I failed at doing different things. But that essentially made me into the player I am today. The street baller mentality. You know, you see players like Messi, Ronaldo, Suarez, all those guys. There's not many of those guys left that grew up on the streets. You know, didn't have cleats, didn't have anything glamorous, and they just played for the love of the game, and they were creative. So I was able to play freely and to try different things as a kid, and that's essentially what laid my foundation.
Now, Carly, I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but what you're essentially talking about is how the world's game is portrayed all around the world except for the continental United States, where it's a suburban sport. And you talk about that street soccer mentality. Do you feel that we're too frigid to, or I should say rigid, and set in this structure here in the United States when it comes to how we practice our soccer?
Absolutely. 100%. You know, you're seeing kids step out onto the field nowadays and they don't have a mind of their own. You know, they're not thinking through scenarios. They're not trying to figure it out on the field. You know, they're being told, stand here, pass from A to B to C. There's no creativity. And, you know, that is what troubles me, you know, seeing that and seeing parents trying to get their kids involved in every structured activity possible. What happened to, you know, kids just going, putting two water bottles down as goals and just playing in the park and playing and having fun and, you know, that's ultimately really where it's all about. And we're losing that sense of creativity, and hopefully, things can change, but you know, we could probably spend a week long podcast on just how to fix the game in America.
Yeah. That's you're absolutely right. It's a different show in itself. Okay. So let's go back on track. When does Carly Lloyd realize that she's actually good at the sport and that this may be a realistic possibility in her future?
You know, I played for the love of the game, and I think for majority of my career, I didn't really believe that I could be good. Everybody else around me believed. I had loads of coaches who told me you could play for the national team, but I didn't feel it within, and I didn't think that I was on the right path to be able to do that. And it took me getting cut from the under 21 national team, to really, you know, put things into perspective. I was about to quit the sport. I mean, I didn't know how to get through something like that. I was devastated. And then, you know, I had a huge turning point in my career of meeting a, you know, mentor, coach, and guru in the soccer world who happened to just, you know, land in Mount Laurel, Medford area in New Jersey because he met his wife on the Greek islands. He's from Australia. And we linked up. He started working with me for free. He didn't charge my parents a dime. And he told me from the start, you know, what are your goals? What are your aspirations? And I said, I want to play for my country. I want to play in a World Cup, play in an Olympics. But I didn't believe. And James is his name, was the first one who believed in me. And not only believed in me, but had a plan in place and goals that were achievable. And through the preparation, the mental and physical preparation, you know, he was able to kind of get into my mind and make me believe and prepare me and told me if I do all of these things that he's asking me, I can go on to become the best player in the world. But it took me some time to realize that.
Why didn't Carly Lloyd believe that? Why is it that James believed it, the rest of the people around you believed it, but you didn't believe it?
You know, I think that I'm very critical of myself. I probably, to a little bit of a fault, you know, tried to be too perfect sometimes. But I've always kind of lacked that self-belief. And I think that, you know, even a player of my stature and, you know, somebody who's accomplished all that I've accomplished and play at the highest level, it's important to have a mentor or somebody in your corner who can stick by you, you know, having a really good support system. My husband, throughout the years, we've been married, for, you know, 3 years now. And we actually started dating in high school and, you know, he's been my biggest supporter. I've got friends and family. But you know, a mentor has been incredibly, incredibly important to me. And, we've just chipped away each and every day to be the best we can be.
Now, this next question, I feel you've already answered part of it. Your first, I mean, you debuted in 2005 with the U.S. Women's National Team, and your first, I want to say, what is it, 24 games, you had only one goal. What changes after those first 24 games where all of a sudden you start opening up and the floodgates are open and you become a better player, at least statistically?
Well, growing up, you know, as a youngster and then into high school and into college, I was someone who was pretty lazy. I wasn't fit. I didn't have very good character and I was mentally weak. But I had the street baller mentality. You know, I was fearless and, you know, when the going got tough, you know, I rolled the sleeves up and could play, could lift my teammates up. And I was an attacking personality out in the field. You know, I love scoring goals, but that's all I love to do. I didn't like to do the dirty work. I didn't like to defend. So when I got on the national team and when James and I had been training for a couple of years, we started training and working together in 2003, got back on the under-21 national team. And then, you know, the next step was to get on the full women's national team. 2005, I made my debut. But the game back then in 2005 was a system where, you know, you were a box-to-box midfielder. There were two midfielders in the center, and when one went up to attack, you stayed back and defended. Yep, and vice versa. So I had to essentially, number one, for starters, get myself fit. I could barely run 12 minutes straight. You know, going on a jog outside of my house, I had a pain in my side. I was breathing heavy. Eventually, I worked my way up to running 90 minutes straight. So I've just... every single, you know, day and year, I've just layered upon layered my endurance. But I was that box-to-box midfielder for the first couple of years on the national team. And it wasn't until, you know, the game evolved and was being played a little bit differently where I started to find myself higher up on the field.
Now, before we get into that actual change of position and your national team career per se, I want you to take me back to 1999. You're actually at the opening game for the U.S. Women's National Team. Were you in the stands watching against, I believe it was Denmark, and that Denmark team had gone, they were undefeated in European qualifications for that World Cup. Walk me through that game, what you remember about that game, what you remember about the atmosphere, who you were with.
It was really cool. I mean, you know, that whole World Cup was iconic in so many different ways. I remember the logo vividly, you know, the yellow and just the 99 logo at that point, and I think I was at a couple of tournaments prior to it, and I got, you know, Julie Foudy and Joy Fawcett's autograph. I think I still got to dig it up, but I still have the poster. But it was so cool. And then, you know, to be able to go up to the Meadowlands and Giant Stadium and watch them play in a packed stadium, I think we were really high up on the field, but it was just incredible. And, you know, at that point in my life, I said to myself, this would be unbelievable to play for my country and play in a World Cup, but you don't think that it's possible. You don't think that it's within reach at all. But it was life-changing for me. It was, you know, it gave me extra motivation to want to be them, to want to do that. And, you know, sure enough, some years later, I actually got to train with some of them, which was pretty cool.
I'm sure Julie would be very excited that you're going to mention that when you were a little girl, you got her autograph.
Yeah. I got to dig it up and take a picture of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a favorite memory of that tournament? Maybe a goal or a play or something that stays with you? Because everybody thinks about Brandi Chastain burying the penalty kick and taking out her jersey. But
there were so many moments. Obviously Brandi, you know, making that PK at the end was iconic. Christine Lilly, you know, saving the goal off the line. I think she was a little like 5'3" or 5'4" maybe. but there were so many unbelievable moments. I mean, just to capture that whole entire tournament was cool.
Now, usually when I do this interview, I go through a person's probably whole career, whole life. But with you, it's so difficult because you've got such a long curriculum in history. I mean, you're 2-time World Cup champion, 2-time Olympic champion, 2-time FIFA Women's Player of the Year. So I'm going to fast track a little. I want to know, how is it from 2005, 2010? This is me. I want to know for myself, you, former U.S. men's national team player, how do you get 100 appearances in 5 years?
I don't know. I guess that's a lot, huh?
That is a lot. Because usually if you get, I don't know, I want to say 12 in a calendar year, you've been called up every single game if you're part of the men's national team program.
I mean, I guess it's a little bit different. You guys are a little flip-flopped. You know, you play more so with the club and in your clubs and then don't come in as much with the national team. And whereas us, you know, the national team has essentially been our club for so many years. We've played a lot of games. I haven't been injured too often. I haven't missed out on too many games. I have played a ton of games, and a couple of my teammates just mentioned recently that, you know, I'm creeping 300. And that is just crazy to me because in a blink of an eye, you know,
281 caps.
No, I'm at 290. 294.
Oh, we gotta fire the stat guy.
Gotta update.
294. You're gonna hit 300 international caps. That is absurd. That's amazing.
Crazy. That's gone amazing. By really, really fast.
Now, obviously, it's a huge advantage what you just described for the women's national team program, where you guys are almost treated as a club. I can only imagine there aren't too many teams around the world that can stake that claim. What's one of the disadvantages of knowing your teammates so well?
You know, it's fun. I think it's fun. It's fun to be in the national team environment with everybody, but then it's also fun to compete outside of that. You know, when we step in between those lines, there's no friends anymore. We're competitors. And, I think it's fun to, you know, tackle somebody here and there and just give a little laugh afterwards and have some fun with it. But it's cool. It's, you know, it's great to see the league is thriving, the NWSL, and we're able to compete internationally as well. So I think altogether it's a good thing. It's a good thing that we all know each other super well.
You brought up NWSL. You've obviously played abroad as well. If there was one thing you could change about the league for the betterment of the league and the domestic player, what would it be?
I think we still have a long way to go with the league. It's getting better, but I think, you know, we've got to make more strides. You know, we've got to make this the best league where every player is thriving to want to come here. We've got a new commissioner, which I think is good and a first step, but I still do believe that, you know, we've got to continue to raise the bar. I'm incredibly happy with Sky Blue FC this year, making a lot of changes, you know, we've got a new coach. We've got a lot of new, staff who are hired on. We have, our facilities are now at Red Bull Arena for the games. The training is at Red Bull Arena as well. So, we're making strides, but I still think, you know, we've got to really raise the bars from a professional standpoint.
Is it the best league in the world, in your opinion?
It's definitely the best league as far as competition. Every single week, it's anybody's game. You know, it doesn't matter what record you have, what players you have, everybody's giving each other a game. So as far as that, yes, I do. I know that, you know, there's obviously other leagues that are doing well around the country as well. Spain, Italy, England, Sweden, you know, France, obviously. And I think it just depends, you know, on those types of leagues. There's a couple of teams who definitely have it, you know, professional like environment. And then there's some teams that, you know, there's a big drop off. So hopefully we can continue the investment around the world. It's only going to make, you know, everybody better, make teams better and the women's game better.
Absolutely. Let's move forward to 2015. Confession. I remember being in San Diego at Petco Park, which is home of the San Diego Padres. I was still an active player with both club. I was playing the Liga MX and for the U.S. men's national team. And I remember vividly the game that you guys had, the final versus Japan. It was a big viewing party at Petco Park. It was packed. I had never seen so many people on the outskirts of Petco Park for a viewing party. It only took you about, I believe, 16 minutes, something like that, to score a hat trick against Japan. And one of the most ridiculous goals I've ever seen in any level, whether it be women's or men's. From half field, you saw the Japanese keeper off her line and completely took her for a ride. Describe the moment that you're living as you just see the ball lace off your foot.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to playing in the park freely and being creative. I was someone who showed up at the soccer field every single day, put a ball, a couple of balls out at the halfway line and just tried to drill them. And I loved just watching the ball go in and hit in the back of the net. And there wouldn't be a keeper in there. And I would actually practice it, you know, here and there. I didn't spend a whole lot of time on it. But that day, I was in the flow. You know, I was just in the park, couldn't tell you who I was playing against. I was having fun. I was enjoying things. We had momentum. And yeah, that keeper, I've noticed that keeper off her line numerous times.
That was something that you scouted.
In playing them, she was just the way that they played, the style that they played. She was good with her feet. So she was off her line. And in that era of the game, you know, keepers were really starting to use their feet more and be involved more. So I took notice of that. And I just, the millisecond that the ball came to me, I kind of touched it. I literally looked up and within a millisecond, I knew and I just hit it. And I couldn't have struck the ball any better than when it left my foot. It was one of those feelings where you're like, wow, that was hit pure. And, you know, luckily she got a couple of fingertips on it, but luckily it still went in.
Carly, you talk about being in that flow. Other athletes have referred to it as the zone. Describe what it is when an athlete gets into that flow, that zone.
I think, you know, for me in that particular tournament, the way that the tournament started and the way that it ended was totally different from my individual standpoint and the team's. I think that there was a little bit of pressure and fear that maybe we all were playing with. There were a lot of there were a few tactical adjustments that were made. So, you know, for me individually, the start of the knockout rounds, we played Colombia. We ended up winning that game. Then we played China. It was like I just was focusing on my previous performance. You know, I was not worried about getting to the final. I was not worried about winning the World Cup. It was, you know, played Colombia. The next game was against China, the quarterfinals. It was, for me, be better than I was, a little bit better than I was against Colombia. Then score a goal in China, we win against them. Then it's a semifinal against Germany. Again, focus was just play a little bit better than I did against China. Scored a goal, had an assist, we won that game. And then getting to the final, again, just be a bit better than I was against Germany. And it made my mind focus on the things that I could control. And that was my performance. And that was just, you know, not worrying about all these other things that I can't control. Just doing the best that I can possibly be for me personally, which will then essentially make my teammates better around me. And that was it. And I've had performances like that where I've just focused on, you know, being a bit better than my previous performance and not worrying about anything else. You know, when you go into a game and you're worried about 1,000 different things and you're worried about a lot of things that you can't control, you're taking all of your energy and focus away from performing. So ultimately that's what I did.
What are some of those things you think maybe the team was dealing with pressure wise or not being able to control that might've been able to affect the team?
Well, I think, you know, we sort of went into the tournament and everyone was labeling our group the group of death. It was one of the toughest groups. You know, we played Australia, we played Sweden, we had Nigeria. It was a very tough group. The pressure of not winning a World Cup in 16 years, you know, everyone was talking about the 99 team. There was all that added stuff. Yes, we were prepared, we were ready, but I think that we just needed to be ourselves. We needed to unleash what we do best, the American mentality, going at teams, smothering teams. Yes, we're going to make mistakes, but we kind of sat back. You know, the first couple of games, we were two blocks of four. I was more defensive along with Lauren Holiday in the middle of the field. And that's not us. That's not me. And so when we got some yellow card into some yellow card issues with Megan Rapinoe and Lauren Holiday, you know, I remember Jill calling me into her room and saying, look, you know, we need to go at China. I want you to just play freely. I want you to, you know, I'm going to unleash you. I'm going to have Morgan Bryan sitting in behind you. Go be yourself, and you're going to push up almost as like a withdrawn forward. So that's what I did. I just went out and I was myself. And I think the team started to gain more momentum, knowing that we've got to put teams under pressure. We can't let teams just come at us. We've got to put them under pressure. And, you know, we did well against China, and then we went into Germany with, you know, even more motivation, American mentality. And then we got the job done in, against Japan.
You mentioned having that cloud of the 1999 women's group over you guys. When you finally won the World Cup, was it finally like, oh, great, I don't have to listen about the 1999 team anymore?
No, I mean, I think it wasn't that. It was, you know, it was the media. It was the media coming up with storylines, and we hadn't won in 16 years. And it was never this, you know, pinning the 99 team against us. You know, what they did was remarkable. I mean, we wanted to be in their category of winning a World Cup. I mean, every single player, that was every single player's dream of doing that. So I think it was more of just the media trying to pin that. And, you know, 2011, we fell short. We lost to Japan in the final, and we thought that was our year. So it was just this buildup of emotions. And, you know, having not won it in quite some time was a big thing. So I think that all of us were never wanting the whole 99 team to ever go away and not talk about them. We wanted to add to that. And we did, and we got it done. And now we're, you know, alongside of many of those amazing players.
Absolutely. Etched in history. So 2015 is in the books. 2016 rolls around, and now you have the Olympics. Did you feel heading into that the team was in the right headspace? And I say this because oftentimes when a team comes off an incredible performance or achievement, they have that hangover, that championship hangover kind of over them that could affect them mentally, physically, when it comes to stress and emotion that comes with playing and achieving something like that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's why there's no team that's gone on to win a World Cup and to win Olympics back to back. It's a tough stretch. You know, you spend 3 years prepping for a World Cup, 4 years prepping for a World Cup, play the World Cup, and then you quickly have to turn your gear and turn your attention to qualifying for an Olympics and then competing in Olympics. So there's no time in between, aside from this year now with Tokyo being postponed a year. So it's tough. It's challenging, you know, and I think a lot of us were very busy off the field. There were a lot of things that came our way because of winning a World Cup, which was truly amazing. But I don't think that we were ourselves. You know, I don't think that we were able to be creative and fluid in the way and style of how we were playing. And it was disappointing. It was very disappointing to fall that short.
Why couldn't you be yourself? Why couldn't the team play the way it played, you know, the previous 12 months? What was missing? What was lacking? Was there certain instructions, maybe from the coaching staff, that prohibited you guys' play of style to emulate what you guys did in the World Cup?
You know, I think those last couple of games, we just kind of played freely as a team. You know, we, like I said, we went at after teams, and you know, it wasn't a matter of, you know, stand here. It was just a matter of, you know, whatever the game is dictating, just kind of read that. And you know, we were organized defensively. We did sit back a little bit, but then we countered. So, you know, I can't pinpoint exactly, you know, what it was. It just, you know, we weren't at our best when we needed to be. And I think every single player was extremely disappointed in that regard to come out short from that tournament.
Yeah, obviously, there was a lot of disappointment. Hope Solo came out and said straight right after the game, "We lost to a bunch of cowards. The better team did not win." I don't want to ask you to comment on our comments. I want you to ask you if you agree with that sentiment.
You know, I think Hope is somebody who wears her heart on her sleeve. You know, she says how it is. I think sometimes, you know, maybe not in the best moments. But I know Hope very well, and I knew, you know, what she was talking about. I mean, Sweden came out with a good game plan. They sat in, they waited to counter us, and they were smart. And they had Lota up top, who was, in my opinion, probably one of the best strikers as far as her movement off the ball and making runs and behind the back line. I mean, she was world class with that. And they beat us, you know. But I think that, you know, what Hope was referring to was just a heat of the moment type of thing. And I mean, you know, I haven't talked to her since about those comments, if she still wishes she said them or wishes she didn't, but it was just disappointing, the whole Olympics of going home early. And not winning.
We see this often in world football, not only in the women's game, but also in the men's game, where Mourinho or Cholo Simeone, the way that his team, Atletico Madrid or any Mourinho team play, people feel is less than what is actual football, because it's not the Pep Guardiola way. It's not an offensive, structured game. Are you in the mindset that all that matters is to win, or does the game need to be played a certain way?
Well, I'm going to kind of just base things off of right now in our current situation with Vlatko coming in and coaching. Vlatko and the coaching staff haven't come in and tried to reinvent the wheel. We are the best team in the world. We have proven that. We have an unbelievable pool of talented players who bring so many different unique things to the table. He has put his spice on it and his twist on it. And that is to play a certain way, you know, building out of the back, how to break teams down. But he's doing it with the personnel that we have. He can't come in here and say, I want to play like Barcelona. I want to play tiki-taka. We aren't Barcelona. And right. I think many coaches try to do that, where, you know, they grab the way Chelsea play, or they grab the way Man City play, or Barcelona, and they try to implement it in their team, but the team doesn't have the personnel
to do
that.
The pieces don't fit, correct.
So you've got to find ways of what players do you have, and how can we play to the best of our ability? And right now, you're seeing that. You're seeing players who are playing with loads of confidence. Kristen Press, who's doing great. You know, Kristen Press is a player who, you know, she doesn't need structure. You know, she needs to figure the game out on the move, make different runs, do things a little bit differently. Same with me. You know, I'm not somebody who's going to just deal with, you know, having to stand in one spot and be in this structured system. So he's has a philosophy. He has a game plan in place, but he's also giving players the freedom to be themselves and express themselves. And when we play different opponents, there's different ways of breaking them down. So I think that's the best method, is, you know, not trying to be a different team around the world, but being the best possible team that you can be with your philosophy and with your players.
It's funny you mention this, because a few months back I had an interview with Mallory Pugh, and she was stating the difference between Jill Ellis and Vlatko, and maybe saying that your current coach, your current structure, is more tactical than what maybe something Jill Ellis employed in years past. Do you see the difference? Is it that marked between the two?
Definitely. I mean, Vlatko is very detailed, and you have to have a soccer IQ, you know, to do well and play well for him. But he individually develops players. You know, he's got a care of whether it's someone like myself who has almost 300 caps or someone who has 5 caps. He wants to try to make that player better. And while you make those individual players better, you're making the team better as a whole. So it is, you know, we have a lot of meetings. We go over a lot of film. We look at things that we haven't done well. We look at things that we could do better. We look at situations where, you know, we discuss and we have a couple of people chiming in of how they were feeling in that particular moment. So yes, it's his own philosophy. It's a style of play that he wants to play, but it's also using the personnel that we have on the pitch as well.
Now, if I'm a coach, and I'm not a coach, I wouldn't want to be a coach. It's a very ungrateful job. I know that you've had many coaches, and they probably all of them have never been the best coaches. We all have our opinions. But I immediately go for my older players, my star players, and I pull them aside and I have individual conversations about where said player stands. Has Vlatko had this conversation with you about where you stand? And if so, where do you stand in this current U.S. women's national team setup?
No, you know, I think the best thing about Vlatko, and this has probably been the first time in my career where there's been a coach who will reward the players that are playing well. Simple. If you're giving your all every single day in training and you're performing in games and you are doing what he is wanting you to do on the field, you're going to play. So there's no need for a conversation. And it doesn't matter whether you're 37 or whether you're 16. If a 16-year-old is good enough and performing and day in and day out at training and working really hard, they're going to play. So I think that's what's really special, is it keeps the whole group on their toes. It keeps the group competitive, and it pushes people. And I think that's ultimately how you get the best out of one another. You never want to be comfortable. As a player, you never want to be comfortable. And I think that's what's really special about him. And I respect him a great deal. I show up every single day and work as hard as I can. And I don't need him to pat me on the back or whatnot. I just want to keep getting better.
Now, you talk about the comfort level on the field. You started out as a, I guess, box-to-box midfielder. You're now in this sort of hybrid 10 or sometimes 9 role. What have you learned in your evolution of what has been different positions and ultimately being a goal scorer?
I think it's been really stimulating for me to play multiple positions, starting off as a box-to-box midfielder, and then, you know, playing more attacking while somebody's sitting in behind me. I played defensive mid as well during the 2012 Olympics. I played outside mid, left, right. I played up top. And now, you know, the older I've gotten, the more I've moved up top. And it's been another stimulating position to work on so many different things. And I think because I learned the game the right way, the box-to-box midfielder, and then kind of been creeping myself higher and higher up the field, it's made me a smarter player because I've played those positions. And now it's about, you know, my movement off the ball, it's about my runs in the box, and it's about being a sniper in front of the box. And it's been fun. I've been enjoying it. You know, I think that there's loads of people who think, you know, oh, you have to be super fast and you've got to get in behind the back of the line and you know, Carly doesn't fit that mold or whatnot. It's not about that. You know, the game has evolved so much that the smarter and more efficient that you are as a player, it doesn't matter how fast you are. You know, you could have somebody who's the fastest player up top, but if you're going to be offsides all the time, you're not doing the job right, you know, or if you're going to be someone who can't put the ball away, you know, it doesn't matter. So you've got to be smart and efficient, and that's what I've been trying to do.
Carly, I've seen your interviews, I've heard podcasts with you, I've read things about you, and you use this phrase about, or term I should say, sniper outside the box many times. And the more and more I think about it, this is my take. You want to be smarter about how you get open to set yourself up for said shot, but what is your take on being a sniper outside the box?
It's my job to create goal scoring opportunities. You know, as a forward, I've got to score goals. It's simple. You're going to get more chances than everybody else on the field. And a lot of times you're going to miss some. And that's just the nature of the game. But I also can set up goals. I also can create. And I think that's the balance. You know, the game against England that we just played, you know, I enjoyed that game because I checked off the line a lot and I was able to play people through. You know, I still have that midfielder sense of being able to play through balls and being able to create and be able to set people up. So that's still fun for me. And then as far as being a sniper, however the ball comes in, it's my job to get to it. And I've worked a ton on my shooting. I've spent hours and hours on repetitions with shooting. And it's from every different angle. It's from my left foot, my right foot, inside of the foot, laces, outside of the foot, headers, you name it. It's everything. So it's just about being very clean and very efficient because you get that split second, that opportunity to be able to put it away.
Now, we've seen you obviously score goals from half field, and just recently we've seen videos of you kicking field goals. How does this come about? And is there any truth to this that you've actually were offered tryouts with NFL teams?
Yes, that was wild. I was actually asked to come out to a preseason, their last preseason game with two teams. Unfortunately, we had our victory tour after the 2019 World Cup, so wasn't able to do it. But that's on hold a little bit. Now I've got, you know, preparation for Tokyo next summer, so we'll see what happens.
Is that something you're seriously contemplating? Do you want to be a field goal kicker?
I think, you know, what's great about it is the opportunity to be able to show people that I can do it. I mean, I've tried it with the helmet, the pads on.
Really?
I did the secret commercial in the Super Bowl that played before the Super Bowl. And it's not, you know, I can do it. That's the number one thing. Now, do I want to spend time actually trying to get the technique down?
Right.
Yes, I would want to do that before I was going to do something, because anytime I'm going to do something, I want to be serious about it.
What was your longest field goal?
At the Eagles, it was 55 yards.
Wow, 55 yards.
Yeah.
That's NFL already. You know how many teams would take you already?
Yeah, I gotta practice. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Obviously, it's also a grind. It's just a commitment. And you said it yourself, if you get into it, you want to be the best at whatever you do. How do you balance this game that is your profession and life? Obviously, you're married, you have family, you want other things for yourself. Where do you find this balance?
It's really hard. It's really hard, in particular with myself, because I am so driven, which is good because it's made me into the player that I am, that it's very hard for me to shut off. It's very hard for me to come home, to put Carly, the soccer player, away, because I'm constantly thinking about things in my mind of how to get better. And, if I work on something in training, I'm rehearsing that in my mind over and over again. So it's really challenging and it's really difficult. And luckily I have an amazing husband, Brian, who is supportive, who gets it, who understands it, hasn't complained one time, throughout this whole journey. But, you know, this moment, this unprecedented pandemic that we're going through has shut off Carly Lloyd, the soccer player, a little bit. I'm still training. I'm still focusing on that. But I don't have all the other stresses with it. I don't have the teams. I don't have the travel. I don't have the appearances or the things I'm preparing for or the business things. It's been incredibly nice to just be a normal human being, to cook and do the domestic things. So I've enjoyed that, and I'm learning still to balance things.
So when I retired, I got to experience exactly what you're talking about, the let's relax. Even though I jumped right into ESPN, but let's relax. I can cook. I can take my wife out on the weekend for a date. But also you start getting an itch. And has this, in a sense, revitalized you for what's to come?
It has. I am busy. I know loads of people in the world are busy. all I know is I'm busy and I'm working around the clock. I'm training really hard. I'm putting in the effort there. I come home. I'm dealing with my own business of, you know, clinics and my online store. I'm, you know, trying to spend time with my husband, my friends, my family, and just taking every opportunity with appearances and interviews and sponsorships and just doing as much as I can. So I was actually feeling very tired, worn maybe in the mind a little bit. So this is an unbelievable moment in time. Very sad to have it happen this way, but I've been able to recharge like many other people, I'm sure. And really, really taking every opportunity out of this moment, because I don't know if we'll get another moment like this. So, I'm ready to roll. Yeah. I'm feeling good.
Obviously one of those moments that made you maybe feel more tired or more worn mentally was just recently, the U.S. Soccer Federation came out and their legal defense for your equal pay lawsuit, the women that they have right now with the Federation, was it required more skill and responsibility to play for the men's national team than the women's national team. How disheartening was it for you, somebody that's played with them for 15 plus years, to hear this from your own Federation?
It was tough. Yeah, it was definitely tough, you know, especially while we were competing in the She Believes tournament, and it was International Women's Day. And so to kind of get hit with all this stuff coming out in the midst of that, I think our team did a phenomenal job of kind of putting that to the side and playing and performing and winning like we do, because that's ultimately the best thing that we can do, is go out there and give it everything we have. So, yeah, it was definitely very disappointing. You know, I know that the support that U.S. Soccer has given us over the years has been far better than any other team around the world. And with that support, you know, we have been able to be as successful as we can be. But we can be better. You know, we can push the bar. We can make things better. I think that, you know, what we've done for the sport and what we've done throughout the success of this team from the start in the 80s has been incredible. You know, we've been the number one team in the world for so many years. And so hopefully we can figure this whole situation out and move forward, and we'll see what happens.
You speak about that support, and the U.S. men's national team have collectively issued a statement voicing their support, and it says, briefly, USSF has been working very hard to sell a false narrative to the public. My question is, why do you think individually there hasn't been more U.S. men's national team players voicing their support for you guys?
I'm not sure. You know, it's kind of a shame, because in the span of my 15-year career, I feel like we've never really had this relationship with the men. You know, it would be very cool to integrate the two teams, you know, to be the one nation, one team, to have a camp side by side with one another, you know, where one's training on one field and we're training on another field. So, you know, I've spoken to some of the players throughout the course of my career, and they've been very supportive, and they've been, you know, very just happy for us and the success that we've had, and vice versa. You know, we know that this hasn't been a battle against the women versus the men. You know, we need both, you know, men and women from the teams to be supportive of one another. So I'm not really sure. You know, I know that it's tough. It's tough to come out with statements, and I hope the men, you know, continue to keep pushing on and making things better, and we do the same. But we're in this together, and I hope that they know that we fully support them as well.
I guess from an outsider's perspective, because I'm no longer part of that pool or that team, it's part of this feels like it's a shame, because the general public sees it as the men versus the women now, instead of a case with U.S. Soccer.
Yeah, it's been tough, because I think there's been so many things that have maybe been taken out of context throughout this whole EEOC claim and the lawsuit, you know, moving forward. And I think that, you know, I've got people coming up to me and saying, you know, the women are great, and, you know, I don't like watching the men. And I'm like, well, you should like watching the men, because right. The men, you know, are helping us and vice versa. So, you know, we've got to show support to both because we both need each other. And you know, it's been a challenging time on the men's side. I know this, I know it's been, as a former player, you know, to, have these different situations that arise and, what's happened, not qualifying for a World Cup. I mean, I couldn't imagine. So it's hard enough in that regard. And hopefully things can now get better. But you know, I've got full support in the men, and I hope that in the future we can maybe be integrated a little bit more, so we kind of get to know each other a little bit more.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, I got to get your perfect U.S. Women's National Team player, and this is how this dynamic is going to go. I'm going to give you, for example, who's got the best right foot, left foot, and so on, and you got to give me somebody past or present that you would say the best. We're going to build our perfect U.S. women or U.S. Women's National Team player. Okay.
Okay.
Here you go. The best right foot. You can include yourself.
I'm going to say myself.
I knew you were going to say yourself. Here we go. Best left foot.
Probably Christine Lilly.
Christine Lilly. Okay. Best heading ability. There's a few who go here.
Guess got to say Abby.
Abby. And Julie would be the present right now, right?
Close second. Yeah.
Game IQ. Think about this. Game IQ. Who manages the situations best on that field?
I'll probably have to say Megan Rapinoe.
Rapinoe. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How about speed?
Gonna have to say the current moment, I think it's Lynn Williams. I think she's the quickest.
Lynn Williams, okay. How about mentality? That when things are tough, you just always count on this person. It's clutch. It's always the attitude, the persona that comes forth.
I mean, I gotta say myself. I don't know. I think a lot of people have mentality, but I like to think I'm the mentally toughest.
How about this one? Technical ability.
Probably have to say Yael Averbuch.
And last one, trash talk.
Best, gosh.
Who's the best trash talker you've ever seen on the field?
I don't know. Who are you thinking on the women's side?
It's a good one. I would have said Hope Solo.
True. Yeah, Hope is definitely up there. Yeah, let's stick with Hope.
Hope Solo. She doesn't bite her tongue, so that's one of the key ingredients to being a good trash talker.
I was going to say her, actually, as well.
Okay. Well, what's next for you? You're 37 years old, Carly. We want to see you for years to come. What's on the agenda? How much longer do you think you keep going?
Well, you know, according to everybody else, they think because the Olympics are now a year later, postponed, they suddenly have like put me into this dinosaur era, which is funny, but I'm feeling really good. And I think that with another year of preparation, and hopefully make the Olympic squad. That's the plan. Just prepping for that. I know I'm going to be ready. I know I'm going to be one of the fittest. I know I'm going to be the strongest, sharpest, and just ready to do anything I can to help my team. So that's the plan as of now, and might be time to hang up the boots after that. So we'll see.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure covering you, watching you, and I appreciate your time. Thank you, Carly.
Thank you. Appreciate it.